What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Gilad Kariv, the head of the Israel Movement for Progressive Judaism. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom, my friends. If you're listening to Too Jewish, as you are, you probably already know that Judaism is a wonderful religious and cultural world in and of itself, that it has wisdom the world needs, that its ethical teachings are the basis for all of Western civilization, and that our holidays and rituals are beautiful, meaningful, and inspiring. You may know that we invented the day of rest, the Sabbath, as well as the Ten Commandments. The idea of loving your neighbor as you love yourself, a systematic and profound dedication to justice, the concept of tithing and giving charity, tzedakah, the understanding that we're not permitted to stand idly by while a neighbor bleeds, and all of the many moral commitments of monotheism. You probably also know that Jewish food is simply fabulous, that Jewish music is beautiful and extremely diverse, that we invented Hollywood and the movie industry too. And you know that Jewish humor is, quite simply, the funniest stuff out there, and that without Jewish comedians, there wouldn't be much to laugh at in America at all. And, of course, we Jews win a ridiculously high percentage of all Nobel Prizes, proving that we are really, really smart and deeply dedicated to education. But you also know that there are only about 12 million of us Jews in the entire world, 15 million if you count pretty liberally, and that in this world of 7 billion people makes us a tiny, tiny minority. Persecution and attempted genocide have diminished Jewish population throughout history, while today assimilation and dilution threaten to fade our integrity and influence. And this leads to an interesting problem. For in our eagerness to believe that we Jews are much more important than others think, we sometimes accept stories that aren't, well, exactly credible. We want to believe that other people appreciate all the wonders of Jewish life and lore, and that we are as respected and honored as we deserve to be. And sometimes that makes us easy marks. There was a great story out in the news last week, a human interest Jewish tale that was both startlingly unlikely and deeply attractive for Jews. It was widely reported that the great Jewish text of learning law and lore, the Talmud, completed in the 5th century CE in Babylon, today's Iraq, and the single most important source of halakha, binding Jewish law of life for Orthodox Jews, is apparently also the source of systematic and regular study by the entire nation of South Korea. Now, this is an odd story. On the face of it, not quite believable, because the Talmud is a fantastic, elaborate text, but it's also extremely difficult to study without a very strong Jewish background. In general, a pretty comprehensive knowledge of Hebrew and Aramaic is essential, and even if you are studying it in translation, you really must already know very well the full text of the Torah and the rest of the Hebrew Bible, what Christians call the Old Testament, as well as having a solid knowledge of the Jewish annual festival cycle, life cycle, prayer rituals, and much more. While it's true that children as young as 8 or 9 do study Talmud in the Orthodox world, they do so for the rest of their lives also. There are, after all, something like 68 volumes in a standard edition of the Talmud. I have personally studied Talmud for about 3.5 decades, and I can tell you there is nothing so easily accessible about it. And so, the story that this Asian nation, one of the economic tigers of the world, South Korea, a place with virtually no Jewish population ever in its history, has mandated instruction in Talmud for all of its students in a country of nearly 50 million people was very exciting and sounded, you know, too good to be true. We tried to understand why Jews are geniuses, and we came to the conclusion that it's because they study Talmud, supposedly, said the Korean ambassador to Israel. As the story went, this is how Rav Papa became a better-known scholar in Korea than in Israel. This from an internet story. It is doubtful if the Amoraic rabbis Abaye and Rava imagined their discussions of Jewish law in the Beit Midrash in Babylon would be taught hundreds of years later in East Asia, but it is so. South Koreans have required the Talmud study as a part of their compulsory school curriculum. Almost every home in South Korea contains a Korean-translated Talmud. Really. And unlike in Israel, Korean mothers teach the Talmud to their children. In a country of 49 million people who are primarily Buddhists and Christians, there are more people who read the Talmud and far more who own their own copies of tractates at home than in the Jewish state. Far more. We were very curious about the high academic achievements of the Jews, explains young Sam Matat, who was a host on the program Culture Today. Jews have a high percentage of Nobel laureates in all fields, literature, science, economics. This is a remarkable achievement. We tried to understand what is the secret of the Jewish people. How are they, more than any other people, able to reach impressive accomplishments? Why are Jews so smart, intelligent? The conclusion we arrived at is that one of the secrets is that you study the Talmud. Jews study Talmud at a young age. It helps them, in our opinion, to develop mental capabilities. Well, you know, that's true. This understanding led us to teach our Korean children as well. We believe that if we teach our children Talmud, they will become geniuses. Obviously, they've never met the current chief rabbi of Israel. This is what stands behind the rationale of introducing Talmud study to our school curriculum. Mr. Young says that he himself studied the Talmud at a very early age. A young age, as it were. It is considered very significant study. The result is that more Koreans have Talmud sets in their homes than there are Jews in Israel. Mr. Young says, I, for example, have two sets of the Talmud, the one my wife bought me and the second, a gift from my mother. Hoo-ha! The story was picked up by every Jewish news network last week and sent all over the world. And it was also sent around the web. Last summer, too, by the way. Too good to be true? Well, sadly, yes. Don't look for kosher kimchi anytime soon. It turns out that there is a kernel of truth in there somewhere. Apparently, there is a book the Korean kids read that has something like Midrashim from the Talmud in it. You know, great stories. They like this book very much. But the idea that 50 million Koreans are suddenly going to become Elohim, scholars of Talmud, and suddenly create giant Samsung-sponsored yeshivot in every Korea town in the world is not a part of reality. I'm not saying the Korean Jewish enthusiasts who embrace this Talmud story are one pickle shy of a deli, but the fact that we still crave appreciation for our undervalued religious and cultural and, yes, legal tradition should be pretty obvious to all of us by now. We really want to be loved. Or, as this classic shtick would have it, when you're in love, the whole world is Jewish, even Korea.
When you're in love, the whole world is Jewish. When you're in love, rabbits will turn to mink. You seem to fly, you wink and feel so chipper. The moon is a yarmulke high in the sky, and each day is Yom Kippur.
When you're in love,
each deal is a big deal. Never again me. Yes, when you start to fall, the world is your own matzah ball. And everything's borrowed and blue, old and newish. Sort of glass of tea for two-ish. Cause the whole world is Jewish when you're in love. Just take your picture. Mama won't mind to find you brought home a shiver. say. You're on the loop, Niagara will spill chicken soup. Lovely, lovely.
Sort of glass of tea for two ways.
It's a Machayan. For the whole world is Jewish when you're in love.
That was a classic shtick song from the 1960s. When you're in love, the whole world is Jewish. Or maybe when you want them to be studying Talmud, put them in Korea, and, oh, great story, though. More seriously, when we come back on Too Jewish in just a few moments, we'll meet our guest, Rabbi Gilad Kariv, the executive director of the Israel Movement for Progressive Judaism, which is enjoying huge publicity in Israel and great growth now over the Miri Gold case. He is presiding over the most rapid growth of Reform Judaism in Israel's history. Find out why when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. People sometimes ask me if I ever go to other restaurants and try their pizza. The answer is definitely yes. In fact, the other day I went to another restaurant to sample their pizza. So how did it compare to Mama's? Well, first of all, the crust tasted sweet. By that I mean they added extra sugar to the dough. At Mama's, we don't add extra sugar to any of our food. The blend of fresh, natural ingredients we use makes our food taste, well, fresh and natural. Now, there's one more thing I noticed about the other pizza. Based on the portion size and price, I paid about 1.5 times more for it than one of ours. In this economy, that's a pretty big deal. So I guess one reason I try other restaurants is that it makes me realize Mama's Pizza is one of the best. And that's a very sweet feeling. Mama's Pizza with 4 convenient locations. Check them out at mamasfamous.com. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org.
We're delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning, Rabbi Gilad Kariv. He's the director of the Israel Movement for Progressive Judaism, the IMPJ, the organization of Reform congregations and others within Israel. Boker Tov, welcome.
Welcome, Bruchim Abayim.
So this has been an extremely exciting time for the IMPJ. The first official recognition of a Reform Rabbi Miri Gold to be supported by the state as a rabbi. Maybe the largest biennial conference of the Israel Movement for Progressive Judaism. Tell us just sort of a little bit of general overview, briefly.
So I have the privilege to be the head of the Israeli Reform Movement. We are actually the umbrella organization of all Reform, Progressive, Liberal congregations and institutions in Israel. We just finished our 20th biennial, and we celebrated 4 new congregations. And today we have 40 congregations and institutions across the country. Till 3 years ago, we had only 25. And 20 years ago, we had only 12. And it can tell us you something about the rapid growth of our denomination, our community in Israel. We work a lot in the area of communal life, education, but also in the area of public policy, social action. Unfortunately, we have to deal with the situation that the state of Israel, although it's a very strong and vibrant democracy, gives a sort of monopoly to the Orthodox establishments of all religions, and as a progressive denomination, we have to work very hard in order to promote pluralism and freedom of religion in Israel.
Seems to me there's been a dramatic shift over the years that I've been hearing about the IMPJ, visiting Reform congregations in Israel. There used to be a great deal of talk about how awful it was terrible to be Reform in Israel, here we were doing great work, and the Orthodox were stopping us at every turn. And then there was a kind of a change, a sea change. About that a little.
I think there is a change in the Israeli society. It's not only a change inside our movement. The main change is the fact that more and more Israelis are looking today to regain their connections with the Jewish traditions. For many, many years, and I'm talking about the generation of my parents that were born in Israel, and the generation of my grandparents that came as little or young children from Europe, I think that for my parents and my grandparents, the notion of building a state, of creating a new state, those narratives were strong enough in order to establish the collective identity of the non-Orthodox community in Israel. But today, when we're talking about the third and the fourth generations of Israelis, the traditional Zionist narratives are less relevant. It's not that they don't have a place in our collective life in Israel, but we're not any longer establishing a state. And I think that many Israelis, especially young Israelis, are today in a search for a more meaningful relations with their Jewish traditions. They don't want to practice Judaism in the Orthodox way, and the Reform movement, Reform Judaism, Conservative Judaism, other forms of progressive Judaism definitely fill the gap here.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Gilad Kariv, the head of the Israel Movement for Progressive Judaism, the Reform Movement, and other affiliated movements within Israel, non-Orthodox movements, when we come back and find out especially about some of the really dramatic changes with the Mary Gold case.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, almost 10 years of them now, or download them from there at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular podcasts. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
We both recently returned from trips to Israel at the same time. You stayed a little longer. You got to stay a little longer than I did. We talked last week a little bit about the Gay Pride Parade. Just one story maybe that shows a little bit about Israeli society. When we were driving off to go to Shabbat services on that Friday of the Gay Pride Parade in Tel Aviv, we're going to a lovely service. Everybody's dressed up on our bus, Jews, Episcopalians, you know, a really nice interfaith group, everybody kind of excited. There were still people walking around from the big party. There was a guy there wearing almost nothing. I think that's a fair assessment, something between a thong and a handkerchief. And he decided he was going to, you know, dance around and show everybody how excited he was. And then some people from our group noticed him, and so he showed off a little for them. And one of the women on our group said, boy, what great body confidence he has. You know, and then we drove off and went to Shabbat services, which were quite lovely and not quite the same spirit. I don't know why that embodies something about Israeli society today that's quite different, but what observations do you have, having just been there, spent some time, and obviously spent a good deal of time in the States now?
You know, I wonder if you might be able to say the same on Israel as a state. You know, wow, what a great body confidence it has, you know? It's interesting.
It's sort of the Bar Raffaelli International now, huh?
Exactly. You know, it's very interesting. I do believe Israelis have significant self-confidence, sometimes too much. But on the other hand, sometimes it does open doors and enable them to get to amazing achievements. You know, when we were traveling, the day after the gay parade, we were traveling through Tel Aviv, we took a bike tour. And we had a bike guide that led us around. He was basically, you know, we didn't expect him to be able to explain to us stuff. But along this two-hour bike ride, he stopped in amazing locations, just 100 yards away from where the gay party parade took place. There is the old Dolphinarium.
Right, where the massacre took place in the Intifada.
Exactly. And he stopped there for 2 minutes, but he was able to stand in front of us, a group, you know, a mission from Tucson, and explain what took place, what's the implications, explain to us and point to us that the names, for instance, of the people who were killed there are written on the memorial in both Hebrew and Russian. Because what most of them were teenagers that just immigrated from Russia, made Aliyah from Russia to Israel at the year before the terrorist attack. Then we went on with the bikes and met the Independence Hall where Israel was declared. And from there we drove to Habima, the
National Theater.
Right. And it was interesting. And near the Bima we saw some guys playing some tools and singing on the street, in the middle of the street, and I was listening to the words because they sang in Hebrew, and it was a protest, a social justice protest.
Economic protest?
Economic protest against cost of living, cost of housing, stuff like that. And it was amazing to see him as a guide who is basically not a tour guide. He's a bicycle shop owner or something. You know, he works for the bike shop. And he was able to walk us around those two-hour tour or ride us around and explain those things in detail. He knew what to say. He was fluent in English. He was very self-confident. And I think in a sense, that's the mirror reflection of the same guy that you saw that was dancing on the beach and showing off his body. It's some kind of a confidence that you are able to do things, to break through.
Wonderful description of the dynamism of Israel today. Thanks, Guy. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about great Jewish museums around the world. Last week we talked about Berlin. We've been focusing on Europe. Tell us about some more.
Well, sort of in the category of last but not least, two that are a little bit further east than we've been talking about. One in Budapest, which is attached to the main synagogue there, which is the Dohain Utsa Templum, which is one of these big Moorish things with a dome.
Fantastic synagogue.
Right, it's a beautiful synagogue, and it has a beautiful Jewish museum attached to it. Focuses largely on Hungarian Jewry and Budapest in particular, and Herzl, who was born there, and, you know, a few other kind of familiar figures. But again, the history of Hungarian Jewry and certainly of the Budapest Jewish community did not end with the Holocaust by any means. There were a lot of survivors, by hook or by crook, and a lot of people who left at some point came back. And there were even people who left in 56 and went to what the Hungarians fondly referred to as Toronto, and they returned to Budapest, and there's a thriving Jewish community there now with kosher restaurants and functioning synagogues of sort of several different stripes of Jewish practice and Jewish belief. But striking is this great Jewish museum in a compound co-located with this gorgeous synagogue. Another Jewish museum that's further east and that not many people know about is a very small museum in what was a private apartment in Odessa. This is not like a big city museum. It's kind of curated by one older gentleman who has devoted his apartment to newspaper clippings, pictures, a few ritual objects, whatever. And there's like four or five rooms. It's quite modest. But, you know, people who visit Odessa may or may not need to be reminded that at one point it was the largest Yiddish-speaking city in the world after New York and Warsaw. It was number three. And the role of the Jews and of the Yiddish language in Odessa was such that Yiddish was the lingua franca among Armenians and Greeks and Turks and Russians and Ukrainians and Ruthenians and Romanians and whatever. The language most commonly spoken among these various communities was Yiddish, in fact. Most comic theater was in Yiddish, and to this day, I'm told by people with a much better ear than I have, a stand-up comic in Moscow or St. Petersburg who wants to succeed has to sort of fake a Jewish accent, like some of our great, like Jackie Mason or whatever. They have to sound that way in order to succeed. So, like, perfectly good Russian Orthodox background choir boys, like, go to school to learn to speak like somebody
to
from...
To speak Borscht Belt,
exactly,
basically.
Right, to pass themselves off as an Odessa comic. So
Odessa.
That's an interesting community. It's an interesting, small, very modest museum. But if you happen to be there, it's absolutely worth seeing and paying tribute to the role that Odessa played in Jewish history.
Thanks, Tom, for a wonderful tour through Jewish museums of the world. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. I had the strangest dream last night, a Jewish guy tells his psychiatrist. I saw my mother, but when she turned around to look at me, I noticed she had your face. You can imagine I found this very disturbing. I woke up immediately and couldn't get back to sleep. I just lay in bed waiting for the morning to come. And I got up, drank a Coke, came right over here for my appointment. I thought you could help me explain the meaning of this weird dream. The psychiatrist thinks for a moment and then says, "A Coke? That you call breakfast?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, a special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and eat a good breakfast. And now, a word of Torah. This week we begin reading Dvarim, Deuteronomy, the final book in the Torah. The name Deuteronomy captures a midrashic explanation of the essence of this final sefer. It means a repeated text, which in Hebrew is called Mishneh Torah. This reflects the fact that the entirety of the book is a few long sermons by Moses, recapitulating the events and commandments established over the previous three books. Not bad for a guy with a serious speech impediment. A word about language in Dvarim, which is appropriate since the word Dvarim itself means words. The Hebrew of the book is extraordinary. Terse, strong, muscular in quality, carrying a sense of great purpose and power. It has the unmistakable feel of a true literary masterpiece. And the language itself conveys Moses' message of God's explicit direction as clearly as any text in Torah. Sometimes the medium is the message, and so it proves to be here in the book of Deuteronomy. The narrative of Dvarim begins at the end of the Israelites' journey to the borders of Canaan, the promised land, soon to be renamed Israel. Moses informs the people of Israel that he has now led them for 40 years, as though they might have forgotten that, and that they have now come to a place and time of great importance.
One of the first incidents he recalls goes back to the time when the Israelites were beginning to get organized. Moses himself had just appointed judges and magistrates to help him with the needs of the people. Moses recalls the instructions he gave those leaders. Be fair and absolutely even-handed in dispensing justice. Do not favor the rich. Do not favor the poor. Show no partiality, but simply seek that which is just and right in the world. This is, of course, just the beginning of Moses' long orations, his last hurrah, so to speak. Although he is now, by biblical calculation, 120 years old, though his control over his people has waned, even though his speech is tinged by the bitter knowledge that he will not get to enter the Promised Land, still, he teaches us yet again the greatest lesson. For we Jews must be pledged to create in this uncertain and even unjust world acts and systems of ethics and justice. What greater calling could any people have? When we come back on To Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Gilad Kariv, the head of the Israel Movement for Progressive Judaism, will be back. They are creating new Reform congregations at a dizzying rate. Find out why and how when we come back on To Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace. But sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114. We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
There really are times when Israeli politics resembles an old Marx Brothers movie, and this is again one of those times. For the second time in 2 months, Israeli politics completely transformed last week when Shaul Mofaz's Kadima party voted to quit Israel's governing coalition. Kadima's departure, the result of a breakdown in negotiations over reforming Israel's military draft law to include Haredi Orthodox Jews, shatters the 94-seat supermajority that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu controlled in the 120-seat Knesset. It also raises questions about the future of Kadima, about Israel's draft, and the timing of new elections. While the loss of Kadima's 28 seats still leaves Netanyahu's coalition with a 66-seat majority, all it needed was 60, more than it needs to govern, Netanyahu is now seen as more likely to move up Israel's next elections, which are scheduled for about a year from now. Netanyahu had been set to dissolve the Knesset and call for new elections 9 weeks ago when suddenly Shaul Mofaz stunned the Israeli political establishment and brought Kadima, Israel's main opposition party, into the governing coalition. The move was seen as a gambit by Mofaz, who had won Kadima's leadership a few weeks earlier from Tzipi Livni, to stave off elections in which Kadima was sure to lose significant ground. For Netanyahu, the coalition deal was a way both to hobble his opposition and give him more leeway in formulating a new military draft law. In February, Israel's Supreme Court struck down the current draft regulation called the Tal Law, which excuses ultra-Orthodox Haredim from universal mandatory military service for Israeli Jews. The court ordered a new law must be enacted by August 1st, or else all Israeli Jews will be equally subject to the draft. Netanyahu's other coalition partners include Haredi Orthodox parties that oppose drafting any Haredim or subjecting any of the men to national service. However, his coalition also includes Russian Jews who believe all Haredim should serve fully. The debate over the new draft law has roiled Israel in recent weeks. Many Israelis have long resented what they see as the free ride given to Haredim, who are not required to serve in the army but are still eligible for state welfare. Non-Haredi modern Orthodox Jews, who compose about three-quarters of the Orthodox Jews in Israel, serve in the military just like secular Jews do, but the Haredi ultra-Orthodox don't. In the end, it was the Kadima Party that quit the government in protest over proposed reforms that it said didn't go far enough. Still with me? At a news conference last week announcing Kadima's decision to leave the government, Mofaz said he had rejected Netanyahu's proposal of deferring national service for Haredi men until age 26. Kadima wanted the draft deferral to end at age 22. Everybody else goes in at 18 or 19. It is with deep regret that I say that there is no choice but to decide to leave the government, Mofaz told a closed-door meeting of Kadima, which immediately was leaked to the press. Only three of Kadima's 28 members voted in favor of staying in the coalition. Netanyahu has chosen to side with the draft dodgers, Mofaz told reporters. The prime minister has not left us a choice, and we have responded. And so the prime minister fired back at Mofaz by letter, Netanyahu saying, I gave you a proposal that would have led to the conscription of ultra-Orthodox and Arabs from the age of 18. I explained to you the only way to implement this on the ground is gradually, without tearing Israeli society apart, especially at a time when the state of Israel is facing many significant challenges. I will continue to work towards a responsible solution Israeli society expects. With just a couple of weeks to go before the Tal law expires, it's not clear where Kadima's departure leaves the future of Israel's military draft. What is certain is that Kadima, the party, has been weakened. 2 months ago, polls showed they stood to lose two-thirds of their seats in the Knesset in new elections. Government opponents harshly criticized Mofaz when he then decided to hitch his party to Netanyahu's right-wing Likud. Unfortunately, said Chaim Ramon, a Knesset member who quit Kadima when Mofaz joined the government, everything I warned 2 months ago and everything I expected to happen happened. Netanyahu's allies are the Haredim and the settlers. Anyone who thinks otherwise is deluding himself in the public. This move has brought on Kadima's demise, and Shaul Mofaz is the one accountable. Okay, you probably know that tune by now. If new elections were held today, Kadima would implode, with the biggest chunk of its seats going to Likud. Kadima originally spun off of Likud and others to a new centrist party, perhaps Yesh Atid, or to left-wing parties like Labor. Yesh Atid's chairman, Yair Lapid, called for Netanyahu to declare new elections now. We're ready for elections. It's time to rid Israel of this bad government, Lapid said. In the meantime, Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman's Russian-oriented faction is bringing its own version of the conscription law to a vote. For now, analysts predict that Netanyahu will call for new elections in early 2013. We can hardly wait for the next move. In other news, in Germany, Jewish and Muslim groups issued a joint call for lawmakers to protect the right to circumcise boys after a court ruling in Cologne against circumcision sent shockwaves through their communities. Several Jewish and Islamic organizations said they met with legal and medical experts and European Parliament deputies in Brussels last week to discuss the court's decision. We consider this to be an affront to our basic religious and human rights, the appeal said. Circumcision is an ancient ritual that is fundamental to both of our individual faiths, and we protest in the strongest possible terms this court ruling. To that end, we will vigorously defend our right to maintain our mutual tradition and call on the German Parliament and all political parties to intervene in overruling this decision as a matter of urgency. The unusual joint statement was signed by the leaders of groups including the Rabbinical Center of Europe, the European Jewish Parliament, the European Jewish Association, Germany's Turkish Islamic Union for Religious Affairs, and the Islamic Center in Brussels. They met with members of the European Parliament from Germany, Finland, Belgium, Italy, and Poland. The June 26th ruling by the regional court in Cologne that circumcising boys on religious grounds amounted to grievous bodily harm has caused international uproar. Jewish and Muslim groups have each demanded the German parliament establish clear legal protections for circumcision, calling the issue a matter of religious freedom. and finally a fugitive suspected Nazi war criminal who helped send 15,700 Jews to their deaths was taken into custody by Hungarian police days after being tracked down in Budapest, living openly, by a British tabloid newspaper, of all things. In England, the Sun newspaper, that's the one with a topless page 3 girl in each edition, last week reported that it had found Ladislaw Csikszentmihalyi, 97 years old, with information supplied by the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Israel. Csikszentmihalyi is number one on the center's most wanted list of Nazi criminals. Csikszentmihalyi, try to say that yourself, was put under house arrest last week after being taken into custody and questioned as a war crime suspect. He played a key role in the deportation of over 15,000 Jews to Auschwitz in the spring of 1944 and of hundreds of Jews to Kamenets-Podolsk in the Ukraine, where almost all were murdered in the summer of 1941, said Nazi hunter Ephraim Zuroff, the director of the Wiesenthal Center's Israel office. Csikszentmihalyi had been a police commander in charge of the Jewish ghetto in Kassa, Hungary during World War II. It's now part of Slovakia. According to documentation provided by the Wiesenthal Center, he was particularly sadistic, forcing female Jews to dig ditches in frozen ground with their bare hand. He made dissenting Jews take up stress positions for hours, hit them with a dog lead, and oversaw a shoot-on-sight policy for escape. According to other testimony, he was particularly sadistic. Peter Feldmeier, the president of the Jewish community in Hungary, said he created a camp to torture the rich so they would confess where they had hidden money. Csikszentmihalyi fled to Canada after World War II and took on a new identity. He was sentenced to death for war crimes in absentia in Czechoslovakia in 1948. The Sun reported he fled Canada in 1997 after his identity was discovered, and Canadian authorities stripped him of his citizenship. This case comes at a sensitive time for Hungary, which has seen a rise in anti-Semitism in recent months, with official attempts to downplay it. And that's the news of Jews around the world.
We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Gilad Kariv. He is the director of the Israel Movement for Progressive Judaism, the umbrella organization for Reform congregations, as well as some not-so-Reform congregations, but liberal congregations, non-Orthodox congregations within Israel. Gilad, tell us about how the Mary Gold case evolved and what it will mean not just for Mary Gold, but for other rabbis coming up in the movement now.
So in order to understand the breakthrough that we experienced with this legal case, we need to go back 64 years ago. And in 48, when the State of Israel was established, the first Prime Minister, Ben-Gurion, established a status quo with the Orthodox establishment. Back then, he tried to maintain them in the Zionist coalition. The young state was so busy with many, many challenges that they decided to leave aside the issues of religion and state. And not like in the U.S., in Israel, there is no separation between a church or synagogue and state. On the contrary, the government handed the Orthodox establishments of all religious groups in Israel, not only the Jewish community, but all religious communities, the government handed a monopoly to the Orthodox establishments of the different religions. And as a result, inside the Jewish community, only Orthodox rabbis were acknowledged by the state, got the permission to conduct a marriage and divorce ceremonies, and many other governmental authorities. And during the years, the Israeli government...
All personal status, for example.
Yes, all personal status is under the religious Orthodox law. It's important to know that there are no civil marriage.
Right.
In Israel, not inside the Jewish community, and outside, not in the other religious
communities.
And basically, there is no civil way to establish a family, and all Israeli citizens need to follow the religious law of their own religious denomination or community. One of the outcomes of this lack of separation was the fact that the government of Israel for years supported hundreds and thousands of Orthodox rabbis and paid their salary. And it created a situation that the services of the Orthodox rabbis were very accessible to the average Israeli, while the services of the non-Orthodox rabbi, the Reform, the Progressive, the Conservative, were not so accessible because Israelis became to be used that religious services
are free.
Are free, and this is something
paid by the government.
Yes, this is something that you pay through your taxes.
Your mass, your tax.
And it actually created many challenges for us. First, it was very hard to place rabbis across the country because Israelis, not like Americans, they understand that they pay for the rabbis through their income tax. They don't want to pay once more to their synagogue or to their church. Second, it created a situation that while we had only 15, 20, 25 rabbis in Israel, we had, as Israelis, we had thousands of Orthodox rabbis out there. And for many years we challenged this practice in the Israeli parliament and in the Israeli Supreme Court. And the big news is that a few days ago, the Israeli government announced the Supreme Court that they recognize their constitutional duty to support reform rabbis on an egalitarian base as long as they support Orthodox rabbis. Okay? It's important to say that as a progressive denomination, we do believe in some kind of separation between
church,
synagogue and state.
Religion and state.
Yes. It's important to remember that by accepting the concept of having a Jewish state, we cannot adopt the American model of a full separation between church and state. By the fact that this is the homeland of the Jewish people, you mean that there are some links between the Jewish religion, the Jewish community, and the government. Still, we believe that a different model of separation, what we call the institutional separation between church and state, should be implemented in Israel, meaning that no religious institution should enjoy governmental authorities, that it should be all established on the goodwill of the people that come together and establish their own synagogues and churches and mosques. It should not be through any governmental branch. But we told the government, and we told the Supreme Court, and I think that the vast majority of Israelis support us, that as long as the government supports the Orthodox establishment, they need to support the other denomination. In any given minute, we are willing to change the concept. But if this is the concept, we cannot be left aside.
So whether or not you agree with the basic principle, you don't want to be left on the outside watching the Orthodox have all this state support while your Reform rabbis are put at a major disadvantage.
And it's not only an issue of principle, although I think the principle here is crucial. Any democracy needs to see the principle of equality as the foundation of the acts of the government. But we need to remember that not like 20 or 30 years ago, Reform Judaism today in Israel is not a marginal phenomenon. According to a study that was released by the Israel Democracy Institute a few months ago, today 8% of all Israeli Jews identify themselves religiously as conservative and Reform. Now, keeping in mind that there is an Orthodox monopoly in Israel for the last 64 years, keeping in mind that Reform and Conservative rabbis...
64 years, but more like 2,064 years.
Yes, but yes, well, the Orthodox establishment, the more traditional establishments in Judaism and maybe in other religions, also always tried to
suppress innovation.
Yes, and to ensure their monopoly. Okay. I think that if you remember the fact that for so many years, Reform and Conservative Judaism are undermined in the Jewish state, the fact that there are 8% today that say we see ourselves as reforming conservative Jews, this is an amazing number. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of Israelis today that say that if it's about religious identity, they are reform or conservative. They need to be served.
In America, conservative reform movements are different movements. They get along fairly well on some issues. They don't get along so well on other issues. By and large, respectful, but certainly different. Not so different, or not as different in Israel. By the way, Yizhar Hess is an old friend. He's now head of the Masorati movement in Israel. He was a shliach in Tucson. In the interest of full disclosure,
a great guy and a very
wonderful guy,
and a very good friend,
and a former regular on this radio show too. For those who have been listening for a long time, tell us a little bit about the relationship between Masorati, the conservative movement, and the reform movement in Israel.
Well, I will say that unfortunately, they are very good. Why I'm saying unfortunately? Because one of the reasons that our two movements are so close to each other is the fact that the two movements meet the same challenges with the Orthodox establishment. Basically, we're in the same boat, and we are struggling together in order to promote this basic understanding that there is more than one way to be Jewish in the Jewish state, in the Jewish homeland. And we work together on many, many cases, including the Miri Gold case. It's important to understand that we're talking not only about the recognition of Reform rabbis and progressive rabbis, but also conservative rabbis. You know, by spending one day in Israel in the streets, you get to understand that this is a very, very strong and vibrant democracy, a pluralistic society. Yet, we cannot close our eyes. There are some troubling processes inside Israeli society. The issue of gender segregation in public places, pushed forward by the ultra-Orthodox forces. The fact that ultra-Orthodox students do not study core curriculum, and their share in the Israeli society, or the number of ultra-Orthodox children in Israel is rapidly growing. The Haredi, the ultra-Orthodox demography.
They have a few children, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. Little
more than
yes, than we, Chilonim or Reform Jews have. Issue of racism, ultranationalism, mostly presented by dominant rabbis from Orthodox communities.
How can people find out more about the Israel Movement for Progressive Judaism? What's the website?
First of all, the best way is to come and visit.
Absolutely.
Israel is a wonderful place to spend your holiday. If you're Jewish, if you're not Jewish, it's really a jewel. But if you want to learn more before you come to Israel, our website is very, very simple, www.reform.org.il. It's the website of the Reform Movement in Israel. Many, many materials in English. You can find my email in the website, and if you have any questions, feel free to write.
Gilad, I want to thank you for a great visit, Rabbi Gilad Kariv, the director of the Israel Movement for Progressive Judaism, and we'll do it again soon.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next Sunday at 9 a.m., our guest will be the outstanding political philosopher and author Michael Walser, whose new book is In God's Shadow, Politics in the Hebrew Bible. And, of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or on our TooJewishRadio.com website, where you can stream us and like us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from Israeli Oriental music star Zahava Ben, called Melech Amiti, God is the True Monarch. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.